Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Thursday, the 22nd of January. Very nice to have you with us. It's nice to be back in the studio, although I have to say just a quick shout out to all the wonderful folks at the Clark. We want to thank Michael Conforti. We want to thank Vicky Salzman. We want to thank Sally Majewski, all the people there at the Clark who made our broadcast possible yesterday. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We had a beautiful and wonderful time. They were so nice to us, and we really had a blast. And we just want to thank them. And it's a really, really cool place. And it was an honor to broadcast from there. And, you know, they had a $135 million renovation. And it's just this beautiful lush palace. And it's nice to be here at another lush palace.
Yeah. Morning.
Oh, yes. Just like this one. Right.
That's right.
Right. However, I do have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you told me, and Sarah LaDuke, our wonderful producer, subscribed to this, that I would have no trouble driving back from there on Route 2.
Okay.
Have any of you ever tried to drive on Route 2?
Well, we
It is a very scary
route.
It's a great
ride. It's a
curvy
road, but first of all, it's a straight shot.
It's not straight. If there's one thing, well, straight.
No, but I mean it's one road.
Right.
What do you mean?
It's actually shorter than Route 7. Your GPS will pick Route 2.
If you can stay on it, it's a straight shot.
If you can stay on it, not go over it. It reminds me of my travels outside of Yugoslavia, between Yugoslavia and Albania, with no guardrails.
I happen to like Route 2 a lot.
I'm shocked that you have not. You've never done that road before?
I have once.
In all these years?
And I forgot.
I thought, now we were, let's say, 10 minutes behind you.
Yeah.
And we didn't see a Prius off the side of the road, so we assumed everything was
there, okay. There was a hideous truck accident, a year or so ago, where it just went roaring off the road into the little A-frame bakery.
Sarah and I were coming back, and Sarah was driving, and there was an elderly couple walking in the middle of the road up the hill.
Oh, my God.
And she said, "Why do you want to die today?" That was very funny. Yeah, it's like, what are you doing?
I'm not going back on Route 2. That's
all right.
It.
Well, there are other ways. And,
sure.
It's very pretty in the spring.
But the A-frame bakery isn't really on Route 2. That's really on Route 7.
It's at the intersection, and this truck came roaring off of Route 2 through the borders. There are like big boulders there. They went right through it. And
but I have to tell you, they have the best apple muffins in the
Alan
world there.
A box of apple muffins yesterday, and the things were as big as my head.
They are filled with apples. I'll bet there's two apples in every muffin.
I'm stopping there my next trip. Because
I'm
from WAMC. we do free commercials for you.
Oh, my goodness. We have a lot.
See, look, this is public radio.
I paid. I swear I paid.
There are no commercials. Okay.
I love that we're talking about all this because, we have so much to get into, and it's been just a very turbulent last couple of hours here as far as in the newsroom of coverage. But so the Speaker of the New York State Assembly, Sheldon Silver, arrested on federal corruption charges this morning in Manhattan. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Even though we've heard from all of them, let me just quickly introduce our panel formally. WAMC's Alan Chartok.
Yo.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. And WAMC newsman Ray Graff. So welcome all. We welcome your comments. We were unable to take them yesterday, but we certainly welcome them today. Roundtable at WAMC.org and WAMC.org/roundtable. Excellent.
Rosemary, when somebody introduces you, you can't just nod at the microphone. You have to say something.
I didn't have a chance to say anything. He moved on to Ray so fast.
Right. Exactly.
I don't get the pause of respect you get.
I didn't either, but I didn't want it.
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah.
All right. That was my pause of respect right there. That was it.
Hello, everyone.
refreshes.
All right. So Sheldon Silver arrested on federal corruption charges, sending shockwaves through the political establishment and upending the new legislative session. Mr. Silver, a Democrat from the Lower East Side of Manhattan who has served as Speaker for more than two decades, surrendered to Federal Bureau of Investigation agents early Thursday morning in Lower Manhattan. Before entering Federal Plaza, he said, quote, "I hope I'll be vindicated." He was just yesterday sitting just steps away from the governor as the governor delivered his State of the State address. We obviously, we've talked about the charges. We sort of saw this coming, obviously. But
well, I don't know about that. I don't know that we saw it coming because Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, the fighting U.S. attorney, has not been, you know, he's been investigating the governor. He's been investigating the, you know.
Can you bring that up just a little bit?
Sure.
There we go.
That's the
excellent.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
This microphone.
That's it.
I know you're you were getting a chest x-ray there, and I just wanted to move it up to more of a...
So it was, as you were saying, it
yes,
was not exactly a slam dunk that he was going to be arrested.
This is the longest serving, well, maybe the second longest serving speaker in the history of New York State. He's been here for years. He has no viable deputy who could take over. He has a wonderful chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, a guy by the name of Denny Farrell, but he's very, very old now. And so so this is going to be very interesting. He gets to stay in office
until he's convicted. Yeah.
And we have a history in New York State of accusing politicians who get off in the end, like Joe Bruno, the majority leader of the former majority leader of the Senate, who faced charges for years and then was found not guilty.
I'm a puzzle doer. I enjoy doing puzzles. I enjoy doing crossword puzzles. I enjoy doing things that, you know, acrobatic things with the mind.
It's great.
Wards off
the
sharp.
Wards off the Alzheimer's.
I just want to read a sentence in the New York Times that say that I've been doing sort of acrobatics with all morning, which is, the investigation of Mr. Silver began after Governor Andrew Cuomo in March abruptly shut down an anti-corruption commission he had created in 2013.
Exactly.
That's
and
what.
So
figure that one out.
The famous Moreland Act commission, and the real question is, why did he shut it down just as they were getting somewhere? And one of the places clearly that they were getting to was this very issue, I think, of public corruption of legislators, because something persuaded the governor at the last second to close down that Moreland Act commission. And I'm sure people will tongues will be wagging. Tongues will be wagging about why that commission was shut down this morning.
That's a classic editing thing. You cannot prove you don't have the governor or the head of the Moreland Commission saying, oh, yeah, this is why we had to shut
it
down.
But here's the fact.
But here's the fact. First this happened, and then this happened, and you draw your own conclusion.
Is that fair?
Absolutely.
I mean,
it is
a fact.
We've been looking. On this program, we've talked about why did they shut it down? What was the real thing? What were they getting close to? What's the federal prosecutor looking for? This could be it.
But
we don't
read
know.
It somewhere that this very issue of came out of the Moreland Act Commission. This information.
They had been looking at external, that is outside of their state pay or their regular job, external pay to legislators. And, you know, the thing about this story to me is even the parts that are not about the charges against him are just shocking. I mean, I've just not felt the same about him since he said, it's okay, the little sexual harassment charges to people, and you can fill in people on that later. But the speaker has turned his back on any kind of responsibility for that in the legislature. But it says here,
Not anymore.
Well,
he took so much grief from it, of course.
But he shouldn't have had to. He should have known better. Here's a man who makes $121,000 as Speaker of the House, which is a pretty fair salary. He earns from external income $650,000.
No, well, that's the $650,000
from one
law firm. Now it turns out that there was a second law firm that was giving him money, and he didn't write that down on his disclosure.
But what I'm saying, Alan, is even if that's disproved, even if it's completely wrong, look at how much money this man is making. And we don't know anything about what he's doing for it. Even the disclosed part of it, we don't know.
Right.
And I don't know. That's not a man that I think should be representing us. Plus, he's old. We disagree on that, Alan.
Wait a second.
He's way old.
He's not old. He's
70
years old.
Past retirement. Time to get new blood in. Term limits.
Well, as a 73-year-old, I think I have been agreeing.
Chill just came over the room.
I think there's ageism in the room.
Is there a chill? Because I just... I have like a feverish sweat.
Tremor in the force. It's all right. It's all right.
Oh, did I stir up something?
Let's just pretend like none of this ever happened.
My question is that, I mean, in our recent memory, and I'm... Let's just say we're an outsider looking in, saying we're even in one of the other six states that we broadcast to, or the news that is being reported on NPR, obviously, will go into from Arizona to Colorado to Iowa to Milwaukee. So anyway, so you say, all right, if I'm listening, I say to myself, oh, so you have Joe Bruno, who goes, you know, is brought up on federal charges.
We mentioned that. Yeah.
You have Sheldon Silver brought up, and all this corruption. I mean, what does it say about the state? What does it say about the entire? Well, of course, about corruption in the state, but also it certainly took and takes the State of the Union address that was read less than 24 hours ago.
State of the State.
State of the State, excuse me. Completely off the front page.
Right. And as you may remember, and I hope we have a few moments to discuss it, Governor Cuomo has come up with a total reformation of the education system in New York State.
We'll talk about that in our next
episode. But your point is well taken, that we are talking about, you know, Sheldon Silver first, and then some of these other things.
But... So what does it say? Because it puts a pall over everything, right? I mean, you can't if you come out of that speech, no matter where you sit, and you come out of that speech with a little skip in your step and say, oh, okay, well, this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to happen, and these are all the great things that we can do in the state of New York, rah rah, team team, and then this happens, everything sort of freezes, doesn't it?
Well, I think you're right that everything freezes. On the other hand, I don't know that there was a spring in my step after I listened to that speech, which I would give, in terms of delivery, a C to.
Really?
I didn't think it was great, but I thought that he said some things that were very provocative, especially in the area of education, that really would, if adopted in New York State, something that we'll be talking about throughout the United States.
I think it says a lot about enforcement and investigation. Of course, the corruption is going to be in the legislature. That's where money and power are concentrated in this state. And where else would there? That's a great place for corruption. And yet, we are constantly hearing about investigations and seeing legislators taken in like this. I think it's good.
I wonder what Shelley knew, and I wonder if Cuomo knew this was coming down. I remember back to the introductions yesterday, and Governor Cuomo had kind of a quip when he introduced Dean Skelos, and I forget what it was, have a great year or great year ahead. And then next was Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, nice to have you here, which was all he said. Yeah. And I wonder, did he know? Did Sheldon know?
Did Sheldon know? And Sheldon, I'm sure, knew. But the question is, what role did the governor play in this whole thing? Look, I've been around Albany for a long time. I've worked for politicians who've been accused. I can tell you, the first thing everybody begins to think is, who done it? In other words, who dropped the dime? There'll be people who say, yeah, you know, with Shelley out of the way, the governor is very likely to get his way much more easily on things like education reform, because the teachers union and Shelley Silver are very close. And if you get rid of him, and depending on who comes in, Keith Wright comes in, for example, who is very close to the governor and becomes the speaker, and which is going to be an open question, and it's not going to happen for a long time, by the way. But if that happens, then the old game Clue, who done the murder becomes important.
But why does anyone have to drop a dime if it's a federal investigation?
Well, because somebody has to tell the feds. And interestingly, you will remember that the more, as Rosemary quite perceptively pointed out, the Moreland Act Commission had leads, all kinds of leads. And along comes the governor and says, "Oh no, I'm stopping this commission right now." Along comes Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, grabs all the stuff and says, this is wrong. I'm going to take a look at all of this. And by some accounts, this indictment comes out of that procedure.
We are going to take a break because we're behind a break, so I want to make up for that. And so we'll take a break. We'll sure get to letters. We'll talk more about this and other topics as well. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and you can also go to wamc.org/roundtable. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Rosemary Armeo.
Hello.
Pause. That was a long time ago, Rosemary.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable.
The fun we have. If you could only hear the really funny stuff.
Wow. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. And by the way, we would share it with you, but most of it's...
we'd be thrown off.
Call me later.
FCC illegal, right?
Yeah, obscene.
Yes. So good morning. Welcome back to the program. Very nice to have you with us. And we're going to get to some letters, and then we'll go on to some other topics. And Alan, I turn it over to you.
Well, you're very kind. Let's look at what Don Steiner, our resident comedian and professor, had to say. Silver was paid to deflate the Patriots' footballs.
There you go. There you go.
And then Andrew says, I'm not going to read it all, but he basically expresses the frustration of some when he says Sheldon Silver has been getting away with everything for the past 20 years. It's about time. And Jude says, Shelley Silver, par for the course, as per Zephyr Teachout and her excellent book on corruption. She's written a book on corruption. And then we get into some of the things we haven't covered, Joe, so I don't know if you want me to, but I'll read one really quickly.
Okay.
And that is, Governor Cuomo has consistently skewed facts for rhetoric on education. How can 38% of kids be proficient with 98% of teachers effective? Partly because the score teachers receive for tests is based on student growth, not on proficiency. If your student scores improve, you are effective, and that's what the federal law dictated. And Megan, who wrote that, is very perceptive, because as I heard him talking about how can all of these teachers be so good and the kids score so low, I was thinking of all of those schools where the kids, after all, kids have parents. Ray and Nicole work with their children and help them with their homework and help them with their homework and do all of that. So one of the things that's always frustrated me the most about this is that if you go into some school districts where the performances are so low, they're the most endangered students. And I think that the teachers who teach those people are the ones who should get the Congressional Medal of Honor, because that is a tough thing. Anybody could go to Scarsdale and say to all of the kids, you know, what about, or Delmore, and say to all of the kids, you know, this is stuff. And they know it already.
This is stuff.
But that's different. That's different from going into a very poor and difficult area where kids really haven't been exposed to that kind of learning.
I do want to just a quick note that it was just announced from Preet-Bharara's office that there will be a press conference today at 1 o'clock to announce and discuss the charges against Sheldon Silver. So that'll be happening at 1 o'clock.
Was he released?
It does not. I do not see that in the press release that was sent out from the United States Attorney.
And Alan, as you pointed out, he's still entitled to serve in the assembly. And so you assume that he will be released and be in Albany for business as usual?
To be in Albany as usual, yes. He will be running the legislature, the assembly, until he is convicted. That's the way that it goes. And that could take a long time, if at all, as we saw with Joe Bruno.
According to a very good source, Twitter, he is still in federal custody.
Okay.
All right. So there you go. Actually, Newsday's reporting that as of 11 minutes ago. So
Rosemary and I on the Media Project and Rex were talking about the very excellent communication pattern between the New York Times, which beat everybody And Preet Bharara. Whether or not, you know, that's...
Is that unethical if one newspaper gets an inside track, or is that just good reporting?
That's good reporting.
Or it may be unethical.
Why?
It's not unethical.
Well, because it may be that whoever is leaking wants to leak to the newspaper of record in the United States.
Why is that unethical? Wouldn't you want your information to go out to the best,
want our,
highest possible source?
Okay, I'm sorry, I stepped on you. Go ahead.
No,
you,
I'm done.
Okay, but I think it may be unethical in that you wouldn't want your doctor talking about your illnesses, and it's against the rules. And
not the same.
No, it's not the same. Nothing is ever the same. But we have a criminal justice system which we expect to play fair with everybody. So if you're the editor of the Times Union, the New York Post, the Daily News, we talked about the way that this can happen. In other words, as Rosemary just suggested, the Times has an excellent staff. They may have been doing all of this work, and who knows what the deal is. We have it. Could you not use it yet? You'll get firsties if you get it. Those are all possibilities.
I can't conceive of any scenario in which this would have been unethical on the part of the journalist or of the prosecutor.
Unless the leaker had stock in the New York Times, but that's highly unlikely.
No,
or unless he said, here's the story, don't print this part of it, which there seems to be no indication of that.
Well, we have seen in the past that there's a close working relationship between justice officials and some of the people who cover. So, for example...
That's called good sourcing.
Well,
reporters have worked hard for
that. For example, we're going to do the perp walk at this time. Be there with your cameras. Now
ruled illegal by the Supreme Court. But that was that served the purposes of the law enforcement agents as well as the reporters, because it was saying, look at us, we did our job, we got the bad guys.
Well, that's a mouthful, Rosemary. I think you're exactly right. It served the purposes in that case and in others of the law enforcement people.
And of the reporters.
Look, here is Preet Bharara. I have immense admiration for him. He's becoming the traffic cop in Albany. Andrew Cuomo said he was going to be, but he isn't. And Bharara knows that the more publicity something like this gets, for example, the more likely it is that others won't do it.
Oh, posh. Look at Joe Bruno. We had lots of publicity on that and nothing happened. I think our concern should be with this prosecutor making real charges, getting real evidence, and making this stick. Because I, as a taxpayer, do not want to pay for another bogus, long, drawn-out trial of a state legislator.
Not only that, but you will remember in the Joe Bruno case that these guys have written a law that says if you are accused and you're acquitted, you get to charge the state for all the money you spent. And that's millions and millions of dollars.
Correct.
What annoys me about that law is, what about all the other people who had to spend millions of dollars and other things in order to... Well, you look confused.
Well, the Bruno case was a federal case, though, wasn't it?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you are accused in New York of a crime, federal or state, you are allowed to ask for that money back.
From the state? Even if the feds bring the charges, you can ask the state for money?
Yes. So the legislature
very good rule. That's why Bruno got all that money back. And Alan is right. Why are they in a special class that they should get?
What about the rest of us?
Right.
If that ever happened, God forbid.
Right.
I do want to just real quick. There are already members of the state senate, even Democratic state senators, who are coming forward and saying that are calling for Silver's resignation.
Senators? Do you mean or assemblymen?
State senators. State Senator Brad.
That's Horton, the other house.
A Democrat from Manhattan took to Twitter to call for Mr. Silver's resignation. So if you have even within your own party people calling for your resignation, but we don't see that coming, right? We don't see him saying enough.
It's just another disturbing thing. I mean, I know you're innocent until you're proven guilty, but when you have a cloud hanging over you, when your life is consumed with covering your law case that's attacking you this way, should you be running the state's business?
Well, is there something called elections? In other words, his constituents elect him.
Yeah.
What if he's completely innocent? Then you say, well, I'm completely innocent. I know that I'm completely innocent. And so, you know what? I'm going to resign and look guilty. That's not a good way to roll if you're truly innocent. I'm not saying he is or isn't.
Okay, that's a good point. I have no counter to that. Well, but it just seems like the business in the state legislature is going to be stalled and complicated by this.
Gee, that never happens.
We heard from
maybe
Libby.
That's a good thing.
We heard from Libby.
Libby,
ooh,
Libby,
I
who?
Her.
Yeah, Libby,
Libby
Post.
Pataki?
Wish I could be there to chat up Shelley's arrest.
Oh, that's nice. Very nice.
Darn, missed that one. She's got really like flu and bronchitis and all kinds of horrible stuff. So we said, oh, we'd love to have you, but please don't come. she's getting better, but we'll have her on soon. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be back and we'll talk about other issues. There are other issues and we'll talk about them after this short break.
Support comes from the Opelka Gallery at Sage College of Albany, featuring art exhibits and other cultural events, now showing artist Mike Lear's career retrospective. sage.edu/opelka. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering weekend and week-long workshops for adults and teens in a farm setting. Registration now open for 2015 classes. snowfarm.org. And Dr. Lucy Chapek, Latham, New York, plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation. Since 1996, Surgeon's Hands, Woman's Touch. 518-786-1700.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Thursday morning, and very nice to have you with us. So we're going to continue on the state theme and talk about the State of the State Address, which was delivered by the governor of the great state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, yesterday in a, I was going to say a long address, but it was a long address.
It was combined. Yeah,
it was a budget and state.
It seems like a good idea. Maybe they should do that that way.
He was actually funny because he came on and he said, because it's both, it's going to be 3.5 hours. Yeah,
and we all jumped up at the newsroom.
Right. Oh, my God.
Was he joking?
Yes. We didn't quite know. Alan, you mentioned this earlier, and this was the education portion of the governor's remarks. Obviously, this has been a governor who has been at odds with teachers' unions and teachers, and he came out with guns blazing yesterday.
He did. He also got 1 million votes fewer.
I don't know. Are guns blazing? Is that a phrase?
Blazing saddles. Okay. He got 1 million votes fewer in this election, I believe, than in the first election. And I think some of those were people who love their teachers and who admire them and thinks that he's picking on them. But anyway, here's what he said. Here's his outline. And this, I believe, is from the New York Post. Lift the statewide cap on charter schools from 460 to 560 and remove the special separate cap for New York City, allowing dozens of extra charters to open. Give schools and failing schools a preference in the lotteries for charters. Make student results on state exams count towards 50% of the teacher's evaluation, up from 20%. Give $20,000 annual bonuses to teachers rated highly effective. And by the way,
for 5 years in a row, right? 5 consecutive years? I thought that was part of it.
Interesting. Provide the teachers must earn effective rating for 5 years before they can be tenured up from 3 years.
That's what I was thinking about. Yeah.
And immediately suspend without pay any teacher accused of sexual misconduct. If cleared of the charges, they'd get back pay. And increase.
We could do that with the Speaker of the House.
Who?
Get rid of them while they're under suspicion and then put them back in if they're.
Well,
clear.
There is something to be said about, fairness. I mean,
Nice call, Rosemary.
Interesting.
Increase education funding by $1.1 billion instead of the $377 million if the other reforms are enacted.
Tying them together. That's kind of a...
Yeah, it's kind of a Reagan trick. Mm-hmm. Go down to 55 and I'll give you highway money. Yeah.
I'm very worried about the way, as I said before, that this is being presented by the governor. Because I think some of our teachers are heroic in choosing really difficult places to go and teach in. And I don't like the fact that his demand is that these kids who really have a rough life, who have been in a bad spot, are asked to test out well to provide a teacher raise. I think we have to encourage teachers to go into these very difficult areas.
I'm troubled by charter schools. I just don't think they have such a record of success that we want to create, you know, dozens more possibly under this rule. And Fred
He'd like to have no cap at all.
Fred LeBrun in the Albany Times Union has a very negative take on the state of the state, and he points that out, that many of the donors and friends of the governor are the people who would be creating these charter schools. I'd like to see more research on that. That makes me very worried.
Well, that's interesting, you know, Rosemary. In the last election, the governor garnered about $45 million in his campaign account.
Exactly.
And, you know, the other thing about this education thing is, as I said before, I think this guy's running for president. So almost anything that he does can either be seen as good for New York or good for something that reforming education could be used on a presidential, you know, try. So, for example, he's running all around the world now, all of a sudden, a guy who never went anywhere. And I attribute this to the fact that perhaps he's looking at finishing this term, and then he's going to need something to do. And Hillary showed that
I sort of like ambitious politicians. If he's aiming for higher office, then New York is the beneficiary of that. So I don't know that bothers me.
Not necessarily, Rosemary. So, you know, there are things that may be good for New York, but that if you're showing off for the rest of the nation, you might want to do. And I never finished that sentence, okay. which I seldom do. But I really think, you know, the office he'd like to go to after he's here, assuming Hillary gets elected, is Secretary of State.
Well, it's interesting. If his ambition is behind his maverick and pioneering stand on gun control and fracking, I'm all for it.
Gay rights.
And I'm really interested in what he just came out with on juvenile justice reform, which we're overlooking, to raise the age of accountability. That's great stuff.
And how do you feel about that?
Positive. I think we should. We're not treating kids like kids.
Takes a bullet.
That's why.
That's okay.
People who take a bullet or whose relatives do should not be deciding what policy is.
So I want to be clear. You think then, both of you, that this is the travel, for instance, Cuba. This is a cynical move. Can it be construed as this is a new economic partner potentially?
Right.
And don't you think his pretext that we want to be there first makes some sense?
Well, why do you use the word pretext?
In other words, what he laid out as the reason for him going.
Yes.
Doesn't that make some logical sense?
Well, since I happen to be for this, it does in that case.
And to me, it doesn't matter what the pretext is. It's just doing it.
And going to Israel. New York with a large population of Jewish constituents. Doesn't that make sense for him to do?
Yes.
Yep.
So why would then this be a cynical move toward a potential job down the road?
Well, because it may not be good for New York. I don't think it is good for New York. I don't think an unlimited charter school, a group of charter schools, is okay taking
the
capital.
Okay, well, that's a different argument.
Well, no.
I'm talking about his travels.
Well, you know, you ask a question, I give an answer, I say about four words, and then you jump in and say, well, it's different. So it isn't different. I mean, each case has to be evaluated, but yeah.
I think all of his moves are coordinated in regard to his potential future plans. I think he's holding his way open, and he has seen that if you are a leader in New York on issues that affect not just New York but the entire country, then you will be perceived in a better light.
But is there
a time?
I don't
see how that hurts New York. I like it that he went to Israel, that he's looking at Cuba, that he's looking at school reform, although I don't like these particular reforms. Charter has gotten this big play and big look across the country. So I don't think it's bad for New York to have an ambitious politician as its leader.
Ambitious he is.
All right. In just a few moments, we're going to get a lockbox update, and we'll talk about that in just a few moments. So let's just change the subject, and we'll talk about Deflategate.
Oh.
All right.
Your favorite team is the Patriots, right?
Yeah.
Take them out of the Super Bowl.
I'm
sportsmanship.
I wouldn't say despondent over this, but I'm very discouraged and I guess disappointed and depressed over it. I don't get it. So Ray, I would ask you this question:
yeah.
If you're a Giants fan,
oh, yeah.
if your team did this, how would you react?
I don't know. I mean, this is they deflated by 1 pound per square inch the ball. All right, yeah, it's against the rules. it didn't affect the outcome of the game. They still would have destroyed Indianapolis.
So what if this were your high school team and they say, well, the Pats did it, so why can't we break a rule? This is like a core American value, okay. Sportsmanship.
Yeah, I agree it was against the rules. It's against the rules.
But they all the don't get caught.
That's because they're not under the microscope for
Okay, they're caught. Now they're like steroids. They're caught. Now what do we do about it?
Punish them.
And also, this coach has a history of, you know, interesting ways of...
I was saying earlier that my friends from Cleveland, who remember him from his days there, have come back with these horrifying stories of him being a bully and lying, and he's just not a nice person.
And wasn't there something about catching the signs? Was that something?
He videotaped the signs for the Jets. And
2007.
Yeah. But you remember the karmic wheel turned and the Giants beat the Patriots, the undefeated Patriots, in the Super Bowl.
The karmic wheel.
So... he got his comeuppance.
Yeah, karma.
Yeah. And
but just going to the Super Bowl brings you lots of money and glory. And so should he have that now? Isn't there a shadow cast over? And would it really interrupt all the money involved in the Super Bowl if the team that illegally they lost to, that lost to them, goes instead?
No.
Well, not illegally, but they cheated.
And
right, Joe. And the argument can never be, well, they're all doing it. Because once you accept that argument, then nobody is ever held accountable.
It was a reporter who caught
much,
this, right?
There's far too much in place for them to pull the Patriots out of the Super Bowl.
I think there was a reporter. The way the story is now coming out is that, and this is interesting,
I think, I do too.
Which is a question of the there was a play in the first half of the game in which a ball was turned over to officials. Officials then, that's at the time where they started the investigation. That's when they found out that 11 of the 12 balls were deflated. They then replaced the balls for the second half of the game. My question is, at that point, don't you say, hey, maybe there's a problem and we should rethink this then?
Yeah.
Can I just point out that the Patriots outscored them 21-0 in the second half with fully inflated balls? So, I mean...
But you didn't have to cheat. Well, you still did. This is the whole...
Somebody on ESPN, and I apologize, I was listening to ESPN radio earlier on the ride.
Well,
part of being a well-rounded human being.
I agree with you about that.
Silence you. Somebody made the comparison, and I forget who it was, to Richard Nixon. Nixon won 49 states, did not need to have his people break into the Watergate.
Quite right.
And did it anyway.
Right.
So the question
and
is...
And he was punished.
The pathology involved in Belichick or whoever in the Patriots organization that thinks that stealing the Jets' signs or deflating a ball to beat a team you're clearly superior to... is necessary.
The Washington or the Boston Globe in an editorial said that look, this is a coach who operates in shades of gray. He does not operate in black or white. He sees this game as shades of gray in his plays, and looking at a rule book and trying to see what you can get away with. And this is a question. And yes, a lot of times he can get away with things that are by the rule book. Okay, but in this case, you're violating the rule book. You're playing by the rules.
No.
And I know Alan mentioned steroids, and I don't know if you say, okay, well, that gives you an unfair advantage. Whether you know, could you say that about a ball player that they wouldn't have gotten as many home runs as a result of the steroids? I mean, I don't know how you prove that.
Well, it's tough because they made the Super Bowl, or they made this run. And the question is, how many games during the regular season did this affect?
Well, and now all the teams are coming. You know, the Ravens are coming out and saying that they thought the balls were deflated.
So
all
what's the
teams
sanction?
Are coming out.
I know we have an update coming up. What do you do? You can't kick them out of the Super Bowl.
I don't know.
The entire
infrastructure.
Because the infrastructure of the Super Bowl and all that millions and millions and millions of dollars is already in place.
Rosemary, Katy Perry has to sing.
Play. Yeah, Katy Perry can sing. Everything goes on. You just don't have the Patriots.
No, they won't
now.
Do that. They won't do that.
Do you think they'll kick?
Men, if this were ladies' golf, we would have taken care of it.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
And they use a much smaller ball.
You know, yeah, and they deflate. The ladies deflate the balls in the golf.
Harder to deflate the golf ball, isn't it?
It's all getting very uncomfortable now.
All right. So let us go to an update in our final minute and a half and get an update on our Lockbox Challenge. Megan Finnegan joins us because she has her finger on the pulse of all things Lockbox.
Bring it.
Well, I want to say first that this Lockbox total is not on steroids. This is all gotten completely above board. We have $378,565.
And
which
to go, now this morning we announced, and we didn't know this was going to happen, but now we do. that we're going to get $10,000, what, from Berkshire Bank, is that right?
On day one.
On day one, if we can make halfway in the drive. That means we need about $120,000-something, is that right?
$121,000.
$121,000.
And
how many days?
We have 11 days to go.
11 days. No, it means we can do this. I refuse. I have a major deputy here who says we will not make this. I have always said we will make this. We're going to make it. We can make it because we have no other way to do it. Can we lose? Can we afford to lose $10,000? We cannot. So everybody, get going. Get to the lockbox and do it.
That's right.
What about the bottle?
Yeah, the water bottle. Nice. Well, we have the beautiful water bottle in the studio this morning. 22 ounces, stainless steel.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. You can have your name put on it.
It has a nipple on it.
Yep, you can see it online.
Fine. All right, that's it. I'm done.
At WAMC.org, you can pledge now to the lockbox, get yourself a beautiful water bottle.
Mm-hmm. But the really, there's only one reason to do it. Keep us alive, like the Pats.
No.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.